Welcome to the Good Grow Great podcast, everyone, where we join you and other intelligent entrepreneurs out there in solving for meaningful growth without having to change maybe how you're introverted or without having to revamp everything that you love doing. Here, we look at fundamental and also unexpected ways, stories, and examples that can help you grow you and your business. I'm your host, Talia Toha. Growth solvers, let's get growing. Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. Today we have Alicia Butler-Pierre, who is the founder and CEO of Equilibria, a 14-year-old operations management firm specializing in business infrastructure for fast-growing small businesses. She hosts the weekly Business Infrastructure Curing Back Office Blues podcast. She's also the author of the Amazon bestseller, Behind the Facade, How to Structure Company Operations for Sustainable Success. Combined, her content has generated close to 500,000 views. Committed to doing the right things the right way, Alicia's mantra is to leave it better than you found it. Alicia, welcome to the podcast.
Wow, thank you so much. That was awesome intro.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you deserve it. So let's start at the beginning. And you have this company, Equilibria. So go back to the early days of Equilibria and just tell us a little bit about some of the early challenges of starting that business.
Sure. Well, I started the business quite by, I shouldn't say by accident, but by force maybe is a better way of saying it. I relocated from New Orleans to Atlanta back in 2005, and I left behind a very stable life in New Orleans when I left. I was working as an engineer and just had this feeling that I needed to get out of the city, quit my job, sold my house, relocated to a city where I literally knew one person. And I saw Atlanta as this land of milk and honey. All of these Fortune 500 companies that had some type of representation here. And I thought, okay, I just finished up my MBA. I have my engineering degree. These companies are going to be beating down my door. And it did not happen that way. So what I found was this was right around the time when more and more companies were starting to have their all of the applications were online. And it just felt as though I was filling out all of these online applications and it was just going into this black hole, like an abyss. And I wouldn't hear anything back. And after about 2 months of what seemed to be endless job searching, I decided, you know what, for the same amount of time, effort, and energy that I'm putting into looking for a job, working for someone else, I could redirect that same time, effort, and energy into creating an opportunity for myself. So that's how I started Equilibria. It was around late April, early May 2005, and here we are 14 years later. What's interesting is Equilibria actually started as a professional organizing company. So I was at the time reading all kinds of self-help books and motivational books, inspirational type books. And there seemed to be a recurring theme, and that recurring theme being we're all blessed with natural skills, talents, and abilities, but through a period of indoctrination vis-a-vis our school system, we're taught to kind of alienate those natural skills, talents, and abilities in many ways. Mm-hmm. And so I started thinking about it, Talia, and I said, well, what is it that I'm naturally really good at? And I thought about it and I said, well, you know what? No matter what I've ever done, no matter what type of job I've ever had, I've always done well at those jobs because I'm very organized. And so I started doing some research online, discovered that there was actually a National Association of Professional Organizers, joined that, made up some business cards, started networking, and that was Equilibria.
Right. So was it difficult for you to kind of narrow down that, I guess, specialty, if you will? It sounds like you have quite the background. And was it more kind of, okay, well, this is the best, this is what I'm really best at?
That's a great question. It was really trial and error. And it's interesting how your business shapes and molds according to the people that you start working with. What I found when it was truly a professional organizing company was that the people that I was working with, my clients, they were all entrepreneurs. It wasn't that they were hoarders, for lack of a better term. It wasn't that these were chronically disorganized people. They were just having difficulty keeping their home life separate from the business life because they were operating these home-based businesses. And after working with so many of these entrepreneurs, I realized, it's not that they, again, it's not that they're chronically disorganized people. They just need systems and processes in place. And that's when I started tapping into my background as a process engineer.
That's amazing. So has the early years then, I guess, thinking for some of our audience who are just starting out and trying to decide what kind of specialty that they're going to go to and how long it might take them to get their business up and running. Talk us through, you know, the early months, the early maybe years or so, how you got your clients, who they might be, and maybe some, you know, stories of failures and successes as well.
Absolutely. I started by networking. Social media was just coming onto the scene at that time, so it was all about the face-to-face networking. And I did a lot of bartering when I first started. And what I would ask is, if I do this, if I organize your home office for you and help set up these systems and processes to make sure that things don't become chaotic again, will you, one, refer me to someone else that you may know who could also benefit from this service? And two, can I take pictures and will you give me a recommendation? And so that was the exchange. And after I did that for about the first 6 to 8 months, and as a result of networking, I created a website, because when you do that type of work, it's so visual. So being able to post before and after pictures and really kind of explain the work that was done to get from that before state to the after state was really important. But the referrals started coming, to be perfectly honest with you, and I just kept networking. Some of my early successes and failures, it's interesting. That's an interesting question, because you don't know what you don't know. And a lot of times when we start our businesses, there are some people who will place so much emphasis on having a business plan. And here are my thoughts about a business plan. If you looked at my business plan when I first started my company versus what my company actually is today, it's a complete deviation. And here's the thing. No matter how much research, and don't get me wrong, business planning is still very important. But here's the thing, no matter how much research you may do, no matter how much planning you may do, again, both of which are very important, at the end of the day, your clients are going to tell you what they want. I did a lot of extrapolation in the beginning. So I was doing some research and I was like, oh, okay, well, they're going to want, based on my calculations and based on my research, this was the engineer in me talking, they're going to want this and they're going to want it delivered this way. And that wasn't always the case. I had to learn over time what language to use. I had to learn what language not to use. I'll never forget my very first website. I had something on there to the effect of, oh, I help people do A, B, and C. And I'll never forget, there was a woman who called me for an initial consultation one time. And she said, can I tell you something? And I said, sure. Or she asked, can I tell you something? And I said, sure. She said, you know, I don't like it when you say that you help me. I don't want to be helped. I don't need to be helped.
Right.
And I didn't think, who would have known that a word like help could be so offensive or insulting? And she said, no. You are going to come here and support me in my efforts. You're not going to help me. And I thought, okay, maybe we're playing a game of semantics here, but I came to realize she was right. And so just something as simple as that really shaped and carved how I started to describe what I do, how I started to talk to people about what I do. It's very easy when you're doing that kind of work to offend someone,
Sure.
because no one wants to hear that they're chaotic. No one wants to hear that their space is a mess, that their business is a mess. So you have to find ways of complimenting people on, wow, you know what? There are so many people who never take the initiative to start their own business. Kudos to you. Now let's just get in here and figure out how we can develop some systems and processes to make sure that you can scale this business in a way that's going to be sustainable. That's a much better conversation than saying, okay, oh my God, Talia, this is a mess.
Yeah.
How did you get to this point? Oh, you know what? You need my help.
Right. So come from the perspective of not just support, but more from the perspective of collaborator who is looking for a win from both sides and are there as more like cohorts in some ways, right? So
Exactly.
great. I love that. I love that approach as well. Now, you mentioned that in the early days that you do quite a bit of bartering and, hey, I will do this for in exchange for that. Now, how long, and again, this is thinking about some of the audiences that are just starting something like a new venture. So what is kind of the financial situation that, and obviously just share whatever you're comfortable sharing, but how far in advance do you have to prepare for that type of, I guess, that period of your business? Is it 6 months of, I guess, of daily expenses that you'd have to figure it in? Is it a year, ideally 2 years? Obviously, the more the better. But what in your experience, again, years back that you felt, huh, it would have been enough if I gave myself 3 to 5 years or so, and it would have been so much better if I had done this as far as figuring out the finances and making sure that your business is developed the right way before you stop and you give up.
That is a great question. When I started out, I made sure I had at least 1 year's worth of savings. I must admit to you that my Achilles heel has always been pricing. It has always been pricing. And my business suffered greatly the first several years because of that. I didn't have the right pricing model. And it's more than just pricing by the hour. It's about pricing by value, the value that you are providing. And I think what happens with us as entrepreneurs, especially when we're first starting out, we're so good at what we do, and it comes so natural to us, it's second nature, that we think, oh my God, I can't charge this amount of money for this, because it comes to me, it's so easy.
Right.
But we don't realize that because something may be easy for you, doesn't mean that it's easy for the person that you are working with, for your client or your customer. If it were, they wouldn't be hiring you in the first place. And
Right.
I had to it I must be honest with you, it took me several years to get it right. And my business, again, it took a serious beating because of that. And here's something else that would happen with me also. I would be turned down for work because I didn't charge enough, Talia.
Interesting. So they
Yes.
would think that they see it as an undervaluing of the pricing, and so because it's undervalued, they think that it's not valuable and therefore not worth
Exactly.
acquiring. Interesting. Okay.
Exactly. Yes. It's almost like imagine if you provide the service or product that's comparable to a Lamborghini, but you actually quote the price of a Toyota Camry. That client is going to look at you and say, well, how good can it be? How good can Talia be? She seems well put together. She's college educated. She has a portfolio that she shared with me. She's very articulate. I can tell that she knows what she's talking about. So why? Something's wrong. And a lot of times, just like when you're applying for a job and you're turned down or you just never hear anything and you have no idea why, the same thing happens in business. You may not land a particular client and they won't always necessarily tell you why. But eventually some I would start to receive feedback, you know, like, you know what, you didn't charge enough. You didn't quote enough, Alicia.
Right. That's interesting. I love that approach, actually. So once you figure out that, hey, this product offering is worth more and you start to price it market value, did you have certain options or offerings that allow for other people to come in maybe slightly lower or slightly higher than your targeted, I guess, price? Is that kind of the strategy as far as pricing? Do you have just one price for a specific product? How do you structure that?
Now, I'm glad you asked that question. Always offer, this is something I learned from being a project manager at an engineering consulting firm, always offer at least three options. There's always the option to do nothing, to not move forward at all. Then you can offer a lower price option. So I offer coaching, phone coaching. Who would have thought? But I started, and this is just from years of meeting different entrepreneurs and business owners over the years, and I myself hiring people and working with them in that capacity. And I thought, well, you know what? I could do the exact same thing. There are people out there who are willing to pay for your, excuse me, advice. And they'll pay on an hourly basis or whatever, however you structure that, but they will pay for that just for you to at least lead them or point them in the right direction and making sure that the information that you provide them is customized and tailored to their specific needs. So that's an option that I always present. You know what? If we can't actually work together in the form of a project per se, I can at least guide you through the steps so that if you want a more do-it-yourself approach, you have that option as well. One thing I have noticed about us as human beings, we like to know that we have options.
Absolutely.
Even though you and your client really know what they should do, what would be in their best interest, always present them with different options. And so the higher end option that I offer is actually doing a one-on-one customized project.
And then you go back and you offer like a mid-tier, and then you have the one that is a lot more affordable.
Exactly. Exactly.
Perfect. Now, okay, so you've given us some great value here as far as how to start out, pricing, the period and the time it might take to get your business off the ground. Now, given maybe in this career, but also in your past career, curious, Alicia, did you ever have to choose between two really good choices in your business? Let's just say that maybe you're in the coaching business. Let's say that you're tight on time and you have to choose between two really good clients because you just don't have the time to fit them in, let's just say. Mm-hmm. How did you make, or how would you make such a decision? What would prompt you to pick one over the other? Money aside, let's just say that, you know, they're willing to pay equal price or equal fee. How would you make such a decision?
There have been moments over the past 14 years that I've been in business where a client will offer me an actual job. You know, Alicia, why don't you just come and work for us full time? And it's tempting. But then I have to think about my freedom, my autonomy, my being able to just get up and go whenever I would like to. I like having that freedom and that mobility that is offered through entrepreneurship. And so it, as tempting as it can be sometimes, because, you know, these jobs oftentimes come with benefits.
Right.
It's I have to tell you, there is nothing like having your own personal freedom, having that autonomy, being in a position where you call the shots. You just don't have that when you're working for someone else.
Yeah, it's interesting though, right? How just the difference between, and even if you're working 9 to 5 or full time and it's your own business though, it wouldn't feel like
It
it's
doesn't.
you're working that long, right? It's
It
just
doesn't.
interesting, right? It's just, I just love how everybody has that same experience. Now, looking back at, again, going back to your years' experience, describe particular aspects of what you do or maybe skills that you've developed in your business that maybe you didn't like when you're doing it, but turned out to be absolutely worthwhile in retrospect.
Three things. Public speaking,
Right.
project management, and just managing other people in general. When I was an engineer, I remember whenever I was up for my annual performance evaluation, I was always asked, "Do you want to stay on the technical track or the managerial track?" I always chose technical. My bosses would always try to steer me toward the managerial track. And I never understood that, Talia, until I became a full-time entrepreneur. They saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. They saw my ability to easily interact with people regardless of their background, regardless of their level or degree of education, regardless of their socioeconomic status. I was able to get things done simply based on my communication skills. And I never, again, when things come to you very naturally, you don't look at it as a value-added skill.
You mentioned that managing people have been absolutely valuable. Has there been a point in your business, and let's not talk about the, I guess, that point when that lady mentioned that you, she doesn't want you to help her per se, but would prefer that it be supported. But when was there a time in your business when you're faced with maybe disagreements within your team or maybe with a client when you propose a certain system or a certain way of them reaching their goals and yet you come back with some resistance? So talk about some of those scenarios if you ever had one.
All
Of course, right?
There's always, look, anytime you have two or more people together, there's bound to
Right.
be disagreements. But I can tell you a major thing that I have disagreed with several people over, and this has been probably over the course of about the past 18 months, is this idea of conducting these online webinars. Alicia, you need to do a webinar. You need to do a webinar. You need to do a class. You need to do a webinar. And my pushback has always been, do you understand how much time it takes to actually create a good, effective webinar? That's the first pushback that I give. The second pushback is, I need to know that there will be a certain number of people who would actually sign up for this. And right now, the numbers aren't there. The way I'm always able to, excuse me, usually resolve disagreements is by looking at the numbers, Talia. So what I started doing was just kind of informally polling different clients and asking them, hey, you know, the work that we just did together, if I were to present this in some type of a webinar or online class format, would you actually pay for that? Or would you rather show up in person for an actual class? And they always say, I would rather have this experience and learn this type of information in person in a classroom format.
Wow. So that means that they really value you as a coach. And that's when you know that your coaching business is working, when they see that it really, the one-on-one format is above and beyond, and they prefer that over online courses or webinars, right?
Right. There's something, there are certain things that I think are just best taught in a face-to-face format. There are so many different, I'm amazed at the things that you can learn online. It's absolutely amazing. But there's just something about actually being in a room, being able to physically interact with other people who are also learning the material and asking questions, seeing everything upfront for yourself. And this is what my clients were telling me. No, you know what? I don't know if I would actually absorb the information the same way if it were to be presented to me in an online format. This was the feedback that I was receiving, and it kind of validated what my hunch had been. And that's another thing that I'd like to share with your listeners. There, beware of coaches, consultants, people out there who give you advice that is very rigid. And they tell you, oh, well, no, first you need to do your book, then you need to start a podcast, then you need to do a class, and then you need to do this. Because different things work for different companies, different types of businesses. I listen to a lot of social media experts and influencers, and I listen to them all the time. And I always think about my financial advisor, and he tells me all the time, I can't use LinkedIn. I can have a profile on LinkedIn, but legally, I cannot post certain things on LinkedIn. I can't use social media the way other people, other business owners may be able to use it. So that's why I just say beware of people who give very vague, very generic advice, and it's you know, in their opinion, it's etched in stone, and it absolutely has to play out that way, because that's not always necessarily the case. You want to work with people who will take the time to understand your vision, understand your business and the industry that you're in, and can then tailor a customized solution specific to your company's needs.
Amazing. I love that approach indeed. And the reminder to make sure you go for, I guess, coaches and mentors and programs that work for you. Everyone's mm-hmm. situations are really different. I think it's a great reminder. Now, speaking of learning, was there a moment in your business when you felt that you have absolutely, totally failed? And again, because a lot of businesses come and go within the first 3 to 5 years, and specifically with entrepreneurs who are testing new ideas and new concepts, there is that sense that if this doesn't work, what then? So was there for you specifically, maybe in your coaching or in your consulting as with the engineering company, was there a moment when you said, this is just not going to work? Talk a little bit about that.
I think I have to go back to pricing again. There was a very well-known company that I will not mention in Silicon Valley that approached me about a process improvement initiative. I spent about 3 to 4 months talking with them. And when I finally submitted a proposal, thankfully they were honest enough to have this conversation with me. They said, you know, you came in 3 to 4 times lower than other companies wow. that we contacted about the same body of work.
Wow.
Ouch.
Yeah. Wow.
Ouch, Talia, because if I could have landed that contract, we know how it goes. All it takes is for you to land one famous client or customer, and then everybody else, it's like a domino effect.
Sure.
Everyone else will fall in line. And that was crushing. Oh my gosh, it was devastating. And I said, you know what? Okay, I cannot continue going like this. And so I started reaching out and seeking people who actually specialize in pricing. There are a couple of people now, and I've actually had some of those people on my podcast to talk just about pricing, understanding your value, understanding how to have a negotiation type conversation. I was horrible in all of those things. Absolutely horrible. And I've gotten better over time, but that was a devastating blow, because if I had been able to land that one contract for my company, there were all kinds of other things that the money from that one project alone could have helped funded these other initiatives that I wanted to implement in my own business.
Wow, that's quite the story. So now that you've reached out to all of those people who specialize in pricing and negotiating your price, looking back at that situation, what would you have done differently? Perhaps, I mean, aside from obviously increasing your price, would you approach them a different way? Would you have presented it in a different sequence as far as your proposal? What are some kind of key steps that the audience can take home as far as pricing their offerings to certain clients?
Number one, do not apologize for your pricing. If they start squealing, that's a good thing.
Good.
If you say, oh, you know, well, it's going to cost $7,500 to get started, and this is what we'll do, and they're like, okay, I guarantee you, if you had maybe doubled that to $15,000, well, let's talk about that. What exactly am I going to get for that again? So when you're at a point where they have to pause and say, let me get back to you, that's a good thing. I didn't know that when I was first starting out. When I would hear, oh, let me get back to you, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, okay. Because I wanted a yes right then and there.
Right away, yep.
Right away. And I had to understand and become comfortable with, give people time. Because if they really want it, they will come back to you. And I also had to, here's where public speaking comes into play. So one thing Toastmasters is also really great at is teaching you leadership skills. When you can communicate very clearly and very effectively, and you aren't stumbling over your words, and you aren't using a lot of filler words, you would be surprised at just how much a person's perception of you can change just from you using too many filler words when you speak. They can say, oh, well, she doesn't sound very confident. Does she really know what she's talking about?
Right.
So just being able to, you know, correct my posture as I speak, and I state, okay, this is what it's going to cost you. If this is the service that you're looking for, this is what it's going to cost. This is the amount of time. And you just rattle it off. And people will look at you like, wow, okay, she knows her stuff. And again, they won't question you. I'm at a point now where I don't have to get on a soapbox, tell you like I used to, and oh, let me show you my portfolio, and let me show you this, and let me show you that. Thanks to the World Wide Web, and thanks to social media, you can rest assured that people will go and search for you online. So that's another tip for your listeners. Make sure you are, if you're on social media, be social, be active. Don't keep it as a static site. It's dynamic. It's intended for you to actually socialize. So people, I can always tell when they've been looking me up online, because I'll say, you know, well, I didn't know about your book. Tell me more about your book. Or I see you have a podcast. Tell me more about your podcast. And these are things I don't even mention a lot of times when I'm having, you know, some initial conversations with potential clients. But because they go back and they do their research on me, and they see that, okay, well, she's legit. She's legitimate. All of those things work together to, I hate to say this word, but it's the only word I can think of, but to validate
sure
your pricing.
Sure. And I love that the unapologetic approach to your pricing. I think that's so, so important, particularly for people who are just launching their product or launching their business, because you do have that fear of, well, I don't have credibility, so why should I charge X number? And that goes back to your initial reminder to all of us that really, just because something is easy for you, it doesn't mean that that's easy for everybody else. And that's exactly what we have to be reminded of. I love it.
Yes.
So now we've actually come to the last part of the show. So just talk us through a little bit about your book, Alicia, and then close us off with where they could find you.
Sure. So my book is called Behind the Facade, How to Structure Company Operations for Sustainable Success. And it's all about fast-growing companies. So these are existing companies that are trying to scale to the next level. And as you're doing that, a lot of times when companies are growing really quickly, they realize they need to first hire more people. Well, when you hire those people, they need to know what to do and how to do it. So in my book, I actually introduce you to a methodology that I created for building what I call business infrastructure. So it takes a look at your people, your processes, and all of the different tools and technologies that are needed to literally lay a foundation so that you can build your company and scale to the next level, but that you do it in a sustainable and a profitable way. You can actually find it anywhere books are sold, but if you're looking online, it's obviously on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million. If you don't see it, ask for it, because my book is published and distributed through a company called Ingram Spark, and they have relationships with publishers around the world. So if you have, even if you go to your local bookstore and they don't have a copy, you can actually ask for it, and they can, that bookstore can actually arrange to have the book sent to their store so that you can actually purchase it. And the best way to contact me is online. I am on LinkedIn. You can find me at Alicia Butler Pierre. I'm also on Twitter and Instagram. And my handle is Alicia_B_Pierre. Another great way is to contact me through my website, which is eqbsystems.com.
Alicia, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I enjoyed this conversation.
Anytime. Now, if you want a free template for reverse engineering your timeline and your goals in a chart that can make your decisions easier so that you can make your decisions with confidence and do it better, even during that bumps in the road in your business, go ahead and go to goodgrowgreat.com/GAD, goodgrowgreat.com/GAD for Get Anything Done. And we'll send that right over your way so that you can get started on deciding the way Olympians do and deciding the way masters do. Until next time, growth solvers, let's keep growing.